The Eurozone's fourth largest economy heads for an election. This is the Marketplace Morning Report live from the BBC World Service. I'm Anu Anand. Good morning. Spain has announced new elections in April. The ballot comes as Socialist Prime Minister Pedro Sanchez, who leads a minority government, failed to pass his 2019 budget. With politics in Spain so fragmented, will an election provide a clearer mandate? Ángel Talavera of Capital Economics explains.
According to the polls, we're going to move to a direction which is even more fragmentation, because now we have a new party on the far right that we didn't have before. So this is going to split the vote on the right even more. So now we're going to have probably five mainstream parties plus an assortment of smaller regional parties. The reason for this, the emergence of these parties, among other things, was a series of years of corruption scandals. And sort of, I think people in Spain got fed up. We had a social movement called the Indignados, where people were really angry at politics. And that actually led to this emergence of new parties. So I think fragmentation is here to stay for Spain. And that's not something that this election is going to change.
Are people divided on the economic direction of the country?
I think there is obviously some substantial differences between the parties on the center-left and left and the center-right and right. But on big fundamental issues, things like membership of the European Union, fundamental issues, there are not a question in this election. From a big macro perspective, the impact on the economy is very limited. And we've seen this in the last 3 years, where we've gone through several periods where we had no government. And the economy was still working at, full speed. And the reason for this, among other things, is because Spain has already done a major reform effort earlier in the decade. And I think the Spanish economy is robust enough that it can withstand this increased political uncertainty.
Ángel Talavera. Let's do the numbers. Spanish stock and bond markets are holding steady following the election announcement, which was expected. Meanwhile, European shares have recovered on Friday after weak US and Chinese economic data sent global equity markets into a dive. Now, the World Bank says Nigeria is the country with the most poor people in the world, overtaking India. Just let that sink in. Africa's biggest economy and oil producer has more poor people than India's population of 1.3 billion. So as Nigeria votes tomorrow for a new president, voters are deeply split over the economy. The BBC's Jack Goodman has been crunching Nigeria's numbers for us.
In Nigeria, about 60% of the population lives in absolute poverty, which is a measure of the number of people who can really only afford the bare essentials like shelter, food and clothing. That figure comes from a household poverty survey, which was taken in 2009, released a couple of years later. And there's a revised poverty survey currently underway. We spoke to experts. They don't really see any signs that the numbers of people in poverty is decreasing.
And one of the things that you guys looked at was housing, and that really illustrates the problem.
Exactly. It's a way of showing the scale of poverty and also the differences between the rich and poor. The UN estimates that almost 70% of Nigeria's urban residents live in slum conditions. And building or buying a house is expensive in Nigeria, more so than in South Africa or India. The task ahead in reducing poverty is a big one. Nigerian economists that I spoke to estimate that maybe 5% of the population controls roughly 40% of Nigeria's wealth. So inequality is massive there.
Jack Goodman. Since the Syrian war began in 2011, half the population has left or been internally displaced. More than 300,000 people have been killed in chemical attacks, aerial bombardments, barrel bombs and fighting. And a rare new World Bank report looks at Syria's refugees, the biggest wave since World War II. An estimated 57%, it says, are unemployed. Most young people have fled and most who remain are not in education. Harun Onder is lead author of the report.
Refugees make huge sacrifices to gain access to security, and this sacrifice is in terms of quality of life. In fact, the extreme poverty faced by Syrians in Syria and faced by Syrians in host countries are surprisingly close. In Jordan, we observe between 50 to 60% extreme poverty. In Lebanon, between 40 to 50%. And in Syria, it's 55 to 65%. So it's surprisingly close numbers.
So basically, you're saying that whether Syrians stay in the country or whether they flee to neighboring countries, they're still facing massive obstacles. Now, you also looked at the relationship between host countries, and there are some really interesting counterintuitive lessons there.
Yes, for example, if a refugee family has access to an extra meal per day, this family is 15% more likely to return compared to other refugees who don't have that extra meal. Similarly, when we look at the education levels, the refugees with primary school education are more likely to return compared to refugees with no education. But when you get to higher levels of education, like secondary and tertiary level of education, those are less likely to return.
And this is really interesting and important because the assumption has been if conditions are hostile, then they will go back anyway. But you're saying that isn't necessarily the case.
Correct. The report definitely provides an evidence to dispute a common misconception, which is making refugees' lives, if I can be politically incorrect, miserable, do not always make them return. Those who have better conditions in terms of income or other capacity, they can take this risk a bit more easily.
Harun Onder. Finally, scientists in Germany are growing wine grapes in extra carbon dioxide to simulate climate change. So far, the grapes are bigger and juicier, but so are the pests. I'm Anu Anand with the Marketplace Morning Report, live from the BBC World Service.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.